presenting.
Can we just stop there? So everyone is introduced, and I believe it's your birthday today. We have to acknowledge at least that. Now I can see why you want to leave at 12.
Thank you, Chair President. My 4-year-old daughter loves to spend the day with me, so hopefully I'll catch you.
I think there's something wrong, just hold on. There's something wrong with our the mic.
This is firing us from last.
No, he is leaving at 12 o'clock.
Oh.
Which means he leaves at 12 o'clock, he wants to be with his family to celebrate his day.
Thanks.
Don't take a chance. I'm going for a chance.
You know my sister.
Thank you. In introducing our strategic plan, I think I must just clarify. And in terms of that one seems to remain. And on that involved looking at aligning the ELR. Tendered by the Autonomous Trade Union, but they all participated actively through oral presentations in developing this plan. So, but the written documentation are clarified. The strategic principles undertaken is to engage in research to prioritize study factors that promote labor peace, educator morale, educator well-being in education, to provide dispute management services, and dispute management includes a wide range of process interventions such as facilitation, mediation, conciliation, intervention, resolution, as well as prevention. Through proactive dispute prevention and management services, in a bid to ensure that labor peace, to prevent disputes of rights and matters of mutual interest through such interventions. Equally, to provide collective bargaining services by maximizing the cooperation of parties to the council and promoting the best fit between educational outcomes, and that we mean learner performance, and a fair condition of employment for the teaching profession. To provide training for dispute resolution practitioners, as well as professional development for our panelists, prosecutors, and intermediaries. The CFO, when he's looking at the annual performance plan, will elaborate on some of those measures, including sending our prosecutors and intermediaries to the Justice College of South Africa. The key is to ensure that we have a rights-based approach, and more importantly, a focus on the rights of the children. Further, to participate in special initiatives and campaigns, which are quite important in improving the quality of basic education, namely the Quality Learning and Teaching Campaign, the Teacher Laptop Initiative, as well as the teacher development in respect of, as the teacher laptops roll out, the orientation and development program of the use of technology. And a special project addressing HIV issues amongst educators. We derive our legislative mandate from the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. Section 23 deals with the right to fair labor practices. Section 28(2) gives us the guiding principle, and that is the principle of paramountcy, that in all matters concerning the child's interest of paramount importance. And Section 29(1) is the right to basic education, which is an immediate right. In addition, the Labor Relations Act, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, the Employment of Educators Act, the Further Education and Training Colleges Act, the Children's Bill of Rights, the Sexual Offences Act, the Child Care Act, Criminal Procedures Act, all provide a legislative mandate and framework within which the Council must discharge its responsibilities. The supporting legislation is the Employment Equity Act, the Skills Development Act, the Public Finance Management Act, and the Promotion of Access to Information. The other mandates that guide us in our work is service delivery agreement concluded by our Minister of Basic Education, all MECs of education in the provinces, and the President of our country. The action plan to 2014 towards realization of schooling 2025, Government Gazette number 752 of 2010, as well as SATU's Vision 2030, which contributes towards quality education. Based on this, the ERRC delineates its programs into five major areas. The core business being program one, the dispute management services. We will deal with that. Two, collective bargaining services. And I was asked a question by Honorable Pachwana about the proposed or envisaged performance contract for principals. That's the matter of collective bargaining. Executive services, corporate services, and capital expenditure to the extent that the 30-year-old building that we have requires some immediate renovation and maintenance work to be carried out. In order to discharge those services, next slide, Jeff. Okay. Now, this organogram, unfortunately, has not come out clearly. Jeff, you have to switch to the Adobe version. We'll minimize that, okay? And the red A at the bottom. Thank you. Right. We will now change to the PDF version from this point on. This is the current organogram that we have in order to discharge our responsibilities and obligations. You may not be able to see too clearly from this distance, but at least in your full presentation that we have given you, you will find that it is quite clear. Clearly stated on page 20, page 18. Further, next, the situation analysis. Enter. All right, just move the slide. In terms of the situational analysis, the medium-term strategic framework of the government, 2009-2014, provides the framework within which the ELRC locates strategic planning. The priority area of access to quality education guides the strategic plan in terms of outcome number one, that is the improved quality of basic education, which is the center of our government's approach. The ELRC commits to ensuring that this strategic priority and government programs are paramount in our planning and relates, as it relates to learner outcomes and teachers' conditions of service and career prospects. Equally, if we look at our organizational environment, the organogram looked at the adequate human resources required by our council to ensure it is able to deliver its services. Our panelists are independent of the ELRC and for very good reasons. So those functions are performed by people outside the ELRC, especially mediation and arbitration, so as to have perceived independence. We also provide professional development, especially for our panelists, our prosecutors, and our intermediaries. At the same time, we're also looking at professional training and development, as well as professional development for dispute resolution practitioners of the Department of Basic Education, as well as the trade unions. All of the above, hopefully, will contribute to a culture that is achievement-oriented. Our governance structures provide the strategic direction, and all members of the management team of the ELRC were involved in developing our strategic plan. Next, Jeff. Okay. This slide, unfortunately, you're not able to get, but it's in your PowerPoint, is the strategic outcome-orientated goals. The first being research, monitoring and evaluation. Second being proactive dispute management. The third being collective bargaining that maximizes cooperation. We have good examples, especially in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape, where if cooperation is difficult, then the council is unable to function, and in fact, you can conclude education has suffered in those provinces during periods where there was no cooperation. Strategic oriented goal number four is the training and development, which is quite crucial to improving people's understanding of the law, so that, and the imperatives in education. And outcome number 5 is communication, special initiatives and campaigns that support and complement the core activities. To this extent, our objectives are, and stated already, strategic goal number 1 is dispute management, the key being within prescribed and pre-approved time limits. This is to address the issue of cases lasting beyond reasonable periods. You drew our attention to the fact that some cases took 3 years or 4 years to be resolved. Strategic goal number 2, to assist provincial departments of education in improving the resolution of grievances, improving their handling of disciplinary matters, as well as the issue of suspension, which is plaguing education and the public service. Strategic goal number 3 is to look at strengthening our arbitration and conciliation processes by ensuring the skills of our practitioners is such that it makes informed and legitimate decisions in the process. Goal number 4 is to look at facilitating and promoting collective bargaining. This is an area that's going to warrant significant attention of the council. If we take it, the one issue is we've been sitting with the proposed performance agreement of principals now for at least 2 to 3 years. And so promoting collective bargaining is to ensure that those matters are timely addressed. The first area is to look at developing the monitoring and evaluation capacity of our council, especially around the implementation of collective agreements, settlement agreements, and awards. The sixth area is developing sound corporate governance and promoting organizational effectiveness and efficiency. Value for money is the key. As part of it, our risk management looks at collective bargaining and must address the lack of commitment by our own parties toward bargaining may seriously impede the conclusion of matters. To this extent, the country is expecting our council to develop key policies to improve performance management in education. We also need to reduce the time it takes to obtaining mandates from the parties. Government has its own mandating processes. The law clearly states any matter involving money, the Minister of Finance equally must be consulted. Further, in terms of dispute management, working towards the speedy resolution of disputes is important, as any delay negatively impacts on the quality of education. A school without proper management cannot be expected to function effectively. Okay. That's promotions and appointments. Or delaying cases involving children prejudices the rights of the child and in fact may place other children in serious danger if not timely addressed. So those are the areas of speed and quality in respect of dispute management. Equally important is the frivolous or the wasteful referral of disputes, especially around promotions and appointments. And these create inordinate delays in providing proper management to many of our schools. In fact, you can draw a correlation between dysfunctional school and the lack of effective management in place. The continuous update of our referral forms to complement this dispute is quite important. Some of our forms are outdated and will have to be modernized. Equally, from a funding point of view, in terms of risk, I think after 2014, unless the council increases its levies, it will not be able to sustain and grow the services that it needs to. In the next 5 years, like the NEDLAC Accord on Basic Education realizes that there must be a structure in place that mitigates dysfunctionality or conflict in schools that are between parents and educators or parents and management. Now, there's no formal structure that's addressing this, and this council can and should play that role. So it needs to ensure that it has a financial income to support the widening of those activities in the next few years. I'm now going to hand over to the CFO. CFO, you have to come up here.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members.
Face to face with the IAP.
What
did
you say?
Face to face with the IAP.
Stop declaring.
But I think the annual performance plan basically looks at a 1 year performance period rather than the strategic plan that has been gone through over the electoral period. This is only for the 2012-2013 financial year that starts next month, April 2012. And it has been guided by the long-term plans of government, the medium-term framework, and also subsequent political priorities that might affect it. But as we stand off today, the plan as it's presented will be implemented as from the 1st of April next month. The priorities that have guided the development of the plan are the replacement of the Minister of Education. I think we previously had to account for one Ministry of Education, and now we've got basic education, we've got higher education and training, and that has led to the need to produce now two annual performance plans, one for the basic education and one for, I would call it, part of higher education and training, which is further education and training colleges, which is specific that we are looking at. And we have produced another annual performance plan, which is not relevant today, and also adult education and training, which is also will be coming into the ELRC. So that's where we stand in terms of the replacement of the two ministries. Now, continuation of that, we've also taken the action plan 2014, as long as it could fit into the complementing of the 2014 well starting at 2012-2013, and as long as it's also contributing within the scope of its mandate. A second important influence is the delivery agreement. I think the accounting office has already alluded to that. That has been taken also into consideration in our annual performance plan, and we have also given SATU's Vision 2030 into consideration where it's applicable. Now, the key steps to the council will be implemented in the fiscal years 2013 to realize the objectives set in the IPP. Now, looking at research and monitoring and evaluation activities that should provide evidence base for improved policies and policy implementation, which will promote labor peace, educator morale, and educator well-being. And then we also looked at the disputes of rights and mutual interest, which should be prevented where possible through the intervention and mediation, and collective agreements will be enforced. I think also what's important, the rights of children involved in disputes, I think we'll see later on when we are allocated funding for the 2012-2013, where specific funding is provided for the training of those who will be involved in the resolution of disputes revolving the rights of the children, and also as victims as well as witnesses. And then also, the collective bargaining process will maximize the scope of the parties. I think the accounting officer has already alluded to that. We also incorporated that in the short-term annual performance plan. And also appropriate support and training will be provided for all involved in dispute resolution and collective bargaining. And the training of dispute resolution practitioners, which relates to those who are involved in the resolution of disputes from the trade unions and also from the employer. And also emphasis has been placed on the intermediaries and the panelists who will provide the basis for an effective rights-based approach to the activities of the council. And also sound communication strategies, which the accounting officer has already alluded to. Now, let's look at the situational analysis, that is the performance delivery environment within which we operate in the public education. By way of background, I think we've indicated that since 1994, we catered for the employer and employees in terms of the Employment of Educators Act. The ELRC renders its services of labor relations in terms of the Act, Labor Relations Act, and we discharge services to both employers and employees. Now, the services, I think, have already been indicated earlier on. They haven't changed since 1994. Mostly is collective bargaining services, and we do this both nationally and also through provincial chambers, which are situated in 9 provinces, in order to facilitate consultations even at the level of provinces. And also the promotion of peace through the resolution of mutual interest disputes and the resolution of disputes of rights. Now, if we continue on the situation analysis, we have expanded our services over time. We have included areas of research and development which are pertinent to employment relations in public education. We've also gone into training and development of dispute resolution practitioners, and also involved in the special initiative to support the delivery in public education. Those special initiatives would include areas alluded to earlier, involving the teacher development projects, teacher laptop initiatives. We've expanded into that, but by way mostly of facilitating the process rather than owning the process. Now, the council currently, we cater 410,000 educators in basic education. Over the last 3 years, the environment has been split into 2 distinct areas. I think I've touched on that, which includes higher education and training at ETC, and then there's also a possibility that we might be requested to establish another bargaining unit for adult education and training, which might ultimately be a bargaining unit for higher education and training, separate from basic education. With specific reference to the challenges of performance delivery, the Council for Basic Education primarily operates through 9 provincial chambers. I think I've already touched on that. And the funding model is each of the parties contribute 50% of the determined levy. At the moment, it's 5 rand from the trade unions and 5 rand from the employer. Basically, the trade unions will refer to educators who would be contributing from their salaries. The organizational structure also processes are well established to deliver labor relations services to basic education. In respect of the AET process, the council is still to engage in processes to establish structures to deliver services. I think when we get to the consolidated budget, we will indicate that the AET and the FETC sector is not included in the budget, since we have already separated the two into basic education and further education and training colleges. So when we look at the consolidated budget, we need to keep in mind that this only refers to basic education. Now, let's look at the 2013 budget and the MTEF estimates that we have done, we have provided a 3-year history from 2008-2009 until 2011, and we have projected also for the next MTEF period starting from 2013 to 2015. Now, in terms of the income, if we look at the trends since 2008-2009, there hasn't been any increase in terms of levies that we have collected. The last levy increase was agreed upon in 2007. So since 2007, the contributions have remained the same over the number of years. And the only way to increase the income is through a levy increase, which must be negotiated by the parties to the council. Now, the challenge here in terms of income is to try and manage these funds over the period within which the income remains static. And the way we handle this challenge is to ensure that during the earlier years, when there is a levy increase, we have surpluses that we normally don't return to National Treasury. We request them to be accumulated into the coffers of the ELRC, which ends up with accumulated reserves, which we would normally use in times where the expenditure, as it increases, will catch up with the normal income that comes every year. So if we look at the income as indicated, we had projected that from the year 2011-2012, we will start digging into our reserves right through the 2013-2015 MTEF period. And as the accounting officer had indicated earlier on, we foresee those accumulated reserves that we have to last us until the financial year 2014-2015. Thereby, it necessitates the negotiations to be starting now in order to ensure that by 2015-2016, an agreement has already been reached in order to increase the levies to sustain the operations of the council. I think that's all I could indicate in terms of the income. The expenditure, I think we have allocated funding to the programs as indicated on our strategic plan. And the note, I think, which I have indicated earlier on, I've run through that in terms of the number of contributors, which are 400,000, and the strategic outcome-oriented goals of indicating that they have not as yet been compromised over the MTEF period. The available accumulated reserves will continue to supplement the income. Now, the funding of programs, I think we have allocated 19.5% to dispute management services. We have allocated 43% of our budget to the collective bargaining and related services. Why 43%? I think we need to indicate that when we talk about collective bargaining, it's all done at national level and also at all 9 provincial chambers where bargaining and negotiations also take place. So that's why we allocate the bulk of funding, nearly 50% of funding goes to collective bargaining. And then support services basically is all corporate services, the executive wing, HR and related services, which gets most of the remaining 26%. For the 2012-2013 up to 2013-14, we are embarking on a huge capital expenditure relating to the refurbishment of the building that is owned by the Education Labor Relations Council. So we have allocated 11.5%, which is just over 12 million in terms of the refurbishment of the building. An analysis has been done in terms of whether it's cost effective, whether we compare that as to whether if we were renting our buildings and paying rentals, would we be over a period of 20 years be spending less or more than what you're spending in terms of a refurbishment, and the results has indicated that it would be cost effective if we could maintain our building and spend the 12.5 million over a period of 10 years in terms of rental. We would have spent over 12.5 million over that period. So the normal application in terms of the new supply chain management rules and requirements has been done through the executive authority through to National Treasury, and the expenditure on capital has been approved formally, and it will be going over the two-year period ending in 2013-2014. The last two areas, I think, is indication of the levy, which is being contributed in a moment, and also what I've touched on earlier, that the consolidated budget relating to the FETC sector has, from the 12-13 financial period, been excluded from the presentation that we do to basic education. I think by way of summary, we have indicated the allocation in terms of our expenditure for 12-13, capital expenditure 12%, dispute management 19%, support services 26%, and collective bargaining 43%. Now, in terms of the different programs where delivery has been indicated by way of implementing the strategic objectives, relocating them into the performance indicators, and what the outcome of that is going to be, is what will follow on the next slides. I think if we look at the next slide relating to the strategic objectives, DMS would be relating to dispute management services. We have indicated the strategic objectives in line with the strategic outcome-oriented goals, which the accounting officer has referred to earlier. And we have initially started looking at the targets for 2013 for both dispute management services and collective bargaining. If we go to the next slide, in terms of the annual targets for 2013, if you look at the provision of dispute resolution services, we are saying our target is 100%, and by that we mean all disputes referred to the council should be resolved. There is no way that you can have less than 100% in terms of resolution of disputes. And the way we craft our performance indicators is we look then at the efficiencies. So the performance indicators relating to dispute resolution services will be mostly effectiveness and efficiency in terms of resolution of those disputes. And also we're looking at the resolution of special disputes involving the children, and we have targeted the 70% of arbitrations that needs to be resolved. Now, looking also at the prevention of disputes, I think we are targeting 60% of grievances finalized per province. Here, why it's not 60% is mainly because the grievances are at the level of the provincial education departments, and I think we don't have 100% control over that. However, we are embarking on trying to be involved in the resolution of those grievances, firstly by providing training to the dispute resolution practitioners of the employer, which is the basic education department in provinces, and that is why we have set our target initially at 70% of those arbitrations, 60% sorry, of those grievances that needs to be finalized per province. And I think we have also set targets in terms of training and development services, which we have allocated funding for the training of 240 dispute resolution practitioners and also panelists in terms of professional development relating to updates in terms of the laws relating to education. And then we also have professional development and training where it relates specifically to provincial dispute resolution practitioners, and we are targeting to train 70 dispute resolution practitioners.
I just wonder, members just have seen the book.
If we go next to program number 2, collective bargaining services. The purpose is to contribute to the vision of a strengthened social contract between government, teacher unions, and civil society, to maximize the scope of the party's shared interest, promoting the best possible fit between good educational outcomes and a fair deal for the teaching profession. To promote collective bargaining at national and provincial levels to ensure the development of effective policies for quality public education in a non-disruptive environment for teaching and learning, and further to promote respect for international conventions, constitutional rights and values, and labor legislation in the management of collective bargaining. Lastly, to support and facilitate special initiative campaigns. Next, if we look at the strategic objectives relating to collective bargaining on matters of mutual interest in public education, provision of facilitation services to support collective bargaining at national and provincial levels, and also we look at research on teacher welfare and national development issues. Now, the annual targets, which we'll read to the next slide, relating to collective bargaining in terms of collective bargaining on matters of mutual interest in public education, we have targeted 20% of agreed matters of mutual interest. And I think what we're saying there is it has already been alluded to earlier that the commitment of the parties to the council has initially targeted 20% of agreed matters of mutual interest. Now, if you go to the facilitation services, is to ensure the adequate post-provisioning in all 9 provinces. This mostly relates to the creation and distribution of posts. And we are saying 90% of the distribution of posts should be completed in all 9 provinces. And we would be offering the facilitation thereof in terms of the post-provisioning norms process, which involves all stakeholders in terms of public education. The next one relates to research services, where evidence-based teacher welfare and national development issues would be identified. And we have allocated funding for the attendance of an education conference in the 2012-2013 financial year. Now, separate from the national targets, we have indicated targets for provincial chambers, which should be coming on the next slide there. And what we have done this year is we have not indicated or included all the provinces individually. But what we have taken is these targets will be related to all 9 provinces. They've been standardized, unless otherwise where there are unique situations which would warrant any attendance. We have standardized all those that were considered to be important. However, it doesn't mean those which are unique to those provinces will not be looked at as and when necessary. And the standardized targets for the provinces relates to PPN, that is post-provisioning norms, where annual workshops would be held, and we are saying the process should be completed by the fourth quarter. In terms of information sharing, we have standardized that all provincial chambers should have a declining rate of absenteeism, which is tied to the wellness of the educators. In terms of safety, the target relates to incidents that schools should decline. And skills development, the gaps which have been identified through the process amongst the educators, training should be provided in order to close those gaps. Now, the other important area where the accounting officer earlier related to on the strategic planning process is the monitoring of collective agreements. I think, again, the targets relating to post-provisioning norms is chambers are encouraged to receive reports in terms of the implementation of the post-provisioning norms. And then there should also be a reduction in the number of failure cases. Now, the other issue relates to temporary educators. And the target is temporary educators utilized must be maximized and effectively used, depending also on the funding that has been allocated relating to temporary educators. And I think maybe I should stop there and hand over to the accounting officer to provide a presentation on the executive services area.
Thank you. I think in terms of executive services, this is one in which the we maximize the cooperation of stakeholders so that we can derive greater value through their cooperation and minimize labor unrest and contribute to policy development and hopefully enhance learner outcomes. Equally, the executive services is to ensure sound financial and risk management of the company. Governance should always strive to be of the highest standards, to equally support the production and development of knowledge within the organization, and to this extent we invest significantly in the improving the qualifications and skills of all our staff, and to build the brand image of the ELRC as a public entity contributing to improved learner outcomes. In terms of the executive services, we provide facilitation, financial management, communication, and our targets would be is to ensure that we prevent disputes. Our intervention in KwaZulu-Natal, as we have reported to you, currently we are involved in ensuring that the political agreements concluded in the Eastern Cape are translated into implementation and the effective functioning of the chamber in the Eastern Cape. So that's part of the facilitation. From a financial management and accounting point of view, is to ensure we always have an unqualified report with zero repetition of audit findings. Okay. So that's our zero target. That's tremendous strain on the CFO here. Okay. In terms of communication, is to ensure that the publications that we've targeted are indeed produced and disseminated. In terms of our corporate services, we've also went to the extent of providing efficiencies in their operations, from human resources to financial accounting, administration, facilities management, information technology, to those abroad areas. You will see in the annual performance plan that we have, next item, that we have developed significant efficiencies in all these areas. A key objective is to maintain sound labor relations with our staff, as I indicated to you, from training and development. Our council invests significantly in the education of all our staff. We also try to provide a healthy and safe working environment, and we ensure proper security. I can move on. Our efficiencies have been well identified, and they are contained in the following slides. In terms of financial and administrative, no adverse impact on the operations. That should be a target. Procurement of goods is to minimize theft, corruption, nepotism, and to ensure that there's no major disruption to our operations in the manner in which that is conducted. In labor relations, we measure ourselves to the extent there are no grievances declared against the council as an employer. Training and development, 80%. We'd like to have 100%. Unfortunately, some employees need to be flooded along. So our current target is 80% of them enrolled in programs. Health and safety is 0% injuries at work, as well as security, 0 incidents in terms of any outside crime that's been brought in. In terms of IT, our target is that whatever systems we have in place is not more than 5 years old. So you'll realize we measure all areas of our work. In terms of capital expenditure, the CFO has gone in great detail. The only major capital expenditure that we are going to incur in the next two or three financial years is the renovation of the VLR. I am hoping that no excesses of marble, etc., are going to be utilized in that renovation. I now want to look at, I think I'm not going to go through that, say to come towards the end, and say to you that if you look at the strategic objectives and our annual performance plan, you will see that we have detailed on pages in the annual performance plan areas that we've identified for collective bargaining, and they're quite detailed, but the achievement rate is 20%. Now that may be a bit too low, given that those issues are not being put there for the first time. So I think that's an area that we're going to have to address. Other than collective bargaining, I think our strategic and annual performance plan is measured in fair detail so that we can measure how we are performing and help to improve our performance. As the accounting officer of the ALRC, State for Collective Bargaining, I'm confident that our strategic goals for the period 2013-15 will allow us to make a significant contribution to our government's priority outcome number one, and that is the improved quality of basic education, but more importantly, for the children of our country, improved learner outcomes. This report demonstrates our commitment as a council to government's priorities and the needs of our pupils for improved learner performance. If we are indeed to match or beat the leading country, Tanzania, in terms of SACMEC research findings. That is, Chairperson, the contribution that our plan sets out to make for ourselves as a council, located in the priorities of our country. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Carpenter. You may leave. Thanks a lot, Mr. Garvinder, for this good report. And I'm opening the report for questions. from our members here. Thank you.
I'll start with the ones who like next door to me, Honorable Mishwana. Just remember, people, where are you? Honorable Ponshana, second. Third, Honorable Smiles. Fourth, Honorable Makubera. And then last, fifth, Honorable Moni. And then last, Honorable Tina. Then I got three questions. Thank you.
Honorable Mishwana. Let's keep it at three, and then we can go further afterwards.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll keep it at one. my question has to do with the separation, because it was like spoken about of the two departments.
Mm-hmm.
It was emphasized, and I'm trying to check if there's a plan that since they are separated at the exit point of each of these, and like let me talk of basic education, so that as you complete your learning as a learner from grade R to grade 12, can we be assured that a person who is employable will be produced? Because it may not follow that after completing the first education department, you have to move on to FET universities and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would be very much important for us to have some assurance that the syllabi, you know, it has changed. Like, I know we talk of quality education and stuff, but it has changed such that when you exit grade 12, definitely you are employable. Because that definitely would give a reason as to why we're having these two departments of education. And for now, I would like to keep it there.
Thank you. Next.
Thank you, Chair. I'll condense my 10 questions into three. The first one on special initiatives and campaigns. Following on member statement in the House, the Minister has subsequently issued a statement that she intends, or rather, according to her plan, the performance contract agreements will be out next year. But the unions are singing a different tune. Well, I would be happy if you could brief us as to where this special the performance agreement concerning principals. Right? That's first question. And also, we have not thought, this time we asked this question about computers. We never get a satisfactory answer, really. Teachers there still don't have their laptops. Where are the spokes? And that's my first question.
That was the second one,
because
you had the performance agreement of principal.
I thought that was a general statement. lastly, if in your disputes, were you involved in this dispute between the KwaZulu Provincial Department and NATO? The court case and over the docking. Yeah, because you know what's happening currently. Whilst the union won the case, but the officials now are visiting the principals of school, near harassing them to produce registers of attendance of 5 years ago. You see, or are you involved in such things? And lastly, why are you only looking, utilizing the vision of SATU? Other unions don't have vision, because that's what you are saying here, which would be a pity, really.
I'll convey
this to other unions that that a person reading this will smack of partisanship, you know, which is not. But that's one would read that.
Thanks a lot for that. But I thought you wrote in someone straight opposite you, because you declared. Next.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm very grateful to my colleague in Pontianak for raising the issue about the vision, because it is my first question. Chairperson, we are in a democratic South Africa, which I believe is non-discriminatory. So the reports, the minority reports, are equally important. And I've looked at the documents. Nowhere is there one reflection to say Peru, Natu, Sau is also a vision, or this is their input. If they don't have a vision, at least this is what they are saying. It should be reflected. It is unacceptable that it is not part of these documents. Chairperson?
Yes,
it's a comment, but the question is how can we correct it? Yes.
Fine, it's question number one.
Chairperson, collective bargaining. It is acknowledged or it is admitted that the 20% achievement, which is very low. But I fail to understand why. What are the reasons for that? I've seen one, it takes a long time for mandates to be received or to be concluded. But I don't think maybe that can be the only reason. Are there some other reasons? That's question number two, Chairperson.
Yes.
I'm assisting you in that way as well. Then, Chairperson, number three. And this one, Chairperson, is one question, but it's got three subsections. It's about the situation in the Eastern Cape.
Yeah.
Now, an injury to one is an injury to all. If the Eastern Cape are injured, the learners, then all of us are injured. Now the learners are being let down on a daily basis. And it's labor that lets them down. Yes, the resources as well, but it's mainly labor. Now, what are you going to do? What is your role in resolving the temporary education problem there? Because that is the main problem for the gold slows and the unrest in labor. The second one, have you been part of the agreement which was concluded, in which the minister has denied she has never been part? Have you been part of that agreement between SATU and the Eastern State Government? And lastly, a chairperson on the new demands outside the agreement from SATU, which will lead to another ghost law or another unrest. Is SATU's latest demand to say we want the staff establishment of 2010 to be implemented instead of the latest, which was announced last year? So what are you going to do as a bargaining council and a resolution board about those things? And how are you going to assist them, because they are suffering? Thank you.
Chair, thanks. One learner at some point was not sure whether the number is 4 or 5. So he wrote both. And when asked what is the answer, I said 4 if. To try and say it's either 4 or 5, somewhere in between. You'll be sure. So my questions may be something like that, but I think they'll be contained. Chair, the first, I would like to know on the sensitivity about disputes involving learners or children. What is the turnaround time there? Because it affects these kids. If ultimately the decision will negatively affect the child and you have taken so long
to me, I think it's a problem on its own. Ideally, we needed speedy resolutions of those in particular, so that the learner is not affected for long, because they must be highly protected. It's unlike where you're dealing with adults. I think the thrust of the question is clear. The second one would relate to the objective or target on research. It says that it's to conduct research to support and improve policies and collective agreement. But when you go to the target says attending conference. To me, it can't tell us about performance or something like that, just mere attendance of conference. In as much as we can put money, we can allocate money to attending conference, but it's not a major issue. But that when you relate to conducting research, that should help support or improve policies and collective bargaining. It's a much broader issue, but attendance of just conference to me, Chair, and just when I'm still there, most of the areas, focus areas, have got no benchmarks. No benchmark applicable, either because that area of focus is just starting now or whatever. On some, the benchmarks are yet to be determined, which is, to me, we should have determined it to know what then becomes the target for this particular year. I'm not sure at what point will it be determined then. And I can give examples so that I don't have that time here. And I think Mr. Govender is aware of what I'm actually. If we need examples, we can go to that book and talk to that one. But I wanted to save the time to some degree. Chair, my being last to cooperate with your instruction, it's on SAFE and ELRC. I know that SAFE as well deal with issues of misconduct in terms of teachers and all that. And ELRC does the same on these cases, because some of them take long. At what point do you come in? If SAFE is handling the matter, where do you say you can do it, and where do you give SAFE a chance to run with it? Is there always good coordination between you two, or you get to affect each other at some point? Yes, and on your organogram, are you able to do with one security officer? Because on others, you have got many, and on security, just one security officer on the organogram. And without elaborating, I feel it may not be enough. So, yeah, thanks.
Thanks a lot. Underline.
I have one question, Chair. We've heard that, the levy has been increased once between 2011 and 2007. That's all. My question would be, would it be sustainable to increase the levy once in 5 years? Or were there problems related to that? And then to that score, I just want to find out if that does not lead to imprudently using your reserves, even on operational issues. Thanks.
Thanks.
The first one would be the comment. It's not a question now, it's just a comment. No. No, Chair, it's just a comment just to say maybe ELRC next time, it needs to make sure that other unions also get active, because really I think it puts them in a very difficult position to be asked around the issues of submissions, maybe from other structures which are not doing it, as to say. But I'm not defending. I'm just talking to
you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean to say, maybe that is one of the men they must care to say. How well do they make sure that everyone is active in discussions and submissions so that we avoid such questions next time. But my first question will be on the levy, that needs to be paid. As to say, we hear the presentation, we are talking of somehow, somewhere, the proposal of increasing the levies that needs to be paid because of certain needs, of which for me I'm not yet clear as to say really where do we say we are running short and we really need the levies to be increased, and what proposals are there in place as to say this is how far we think we need to increase those levies. And whilst I'm still there comparing to the reserves again that we still have as ELRC, as to say how can you talk on that increase, and how far are your proposal and versus that with the results that you say you always have. Secondly, Chair, is to look at the mandates and mostly we know which they mostly concentrate on the bargaining processes, but there are other mandates like where they have to participate in special projects like QLTC, like Lena Teacher Laptop Initiative, and the likes, and PCTA. If Chairperson, I can be happy if I can really get to know how far have they participated in these other special projects. I'll just highlight one, QLTC, of which it's quite a problem throughout the country, and there are so many of them that are participating in QLTC. What is the role of ELRC when it comes to such projects? And do you think you are playing that role to the way you are expected to? I don't want to get to the teacher laptop, really. I think we've talked about it, but in the responses, I'll be happy again if ever we can hear what is happening around the issue of teacher laptop. Where is the problem? Because you cannot take for five. It can't be 5 years just waiting for the teachers to receive the laptops, but we don't get the problem as yet. Because last time it was the issue of service provider. I can't believe it will be still the issue of service provider around the thing. I think we need clarity around. I think we need clarity around that. Chair, lastly, when we talk of the time that is taken by some of the cases to resolve them, maybe if you can just get one scenario as to what is it that you are referring to. How long are the cases really? Because sometimes you see them taking quite a lot of time. And just to add on that, if you say the parties in the bargaining council do not participate, sometimes they do not want to. I'll take a scenario in the Eastern Cape and the case at end that you've just been referring to. What am I going to say? What is it that ELRC do? Does it have to stop? Let us say SATU does not participate, NATO or any other union does not want to cooperate. Then what is the fate of the proceedings? I know there are parties that form much a huge percentage of which they need to be there, like these bigger unions. Let us say really, really, they don't want to participate. Are we going to see your program stopping for that whole year, trying to have them coming up to how do you manage such situations? Thanks.
Thanks a lot. What I'd like to speak to, person don't really see the turnaround strategy when it comes to your AG's report of 2010-2011. Because if a person look at certain emphasis on matters, it was in the previous financial year too. So we need a turnaround strategy on the AG's report. How does it fit into your annual performance plan. Then, with some challenges that you had, you spoke about there were vacancies in top management. Was that filled? I think it's going to be important that you speak to that. And then, I think we had Saisia. And there seemed to be a duplication of roles when it comes to the teacher development. And how are you coordinating that with SAIS? Although it was our decision as a committee that we have to call in all our entities and look at that. Then there are other problems too. The other problem, you know, this uncoordinated manner of dealing with referral cases between ELRC and SAIS. I think you have to speak to that too. And then within your book, this book list of yours, I'm looking at the annual performance plan, page 36. There you speak to the quarterly targets which are unique to the Colleen Provincial Chambers for 2013. And you give three states, Gauteng, Limpopo, and Northern Cape, and Northwest. But you don't speak to Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Mpumalanga, and KwaZulu-Natal. And I think, therefore, you know, when it comes to these provincial questions, it's been raised by members. Just speak to that. Why is there nothing in your annual report when it comes to those four provinces? Thank you.
May I answer, Mr. Governor?
I'm going to deal with some issues, Chairperson, because there's some overlaps.
Yes, it does overlap some of them.
So let's just deal with the first
and can I just ask a question? I think what will be important, because I think, you know, everyone spoke to the laptops. But when the DG was here, they spoke differently to the laptops. What is the Department of Basic Education going to do? So we have to speak to that coordination. Thank you.
Let's just take the first issue about the development of the strategic and annual performance plan. And I say this under oath here. PEU, NATU, SAOU, NAPTOSA are represented through what is called the Autonomous Trade Unions. They've actively participated. They did not tender any written submissions. I clarified in my presentation, slide one, the written submissions were the government priorities, the action plan of the department, as well as the sub-2 2030 version. Those were the written. That all other presentations were done orally. Secondly, the document that you have before you is approved by all our stakeholders, the Department of Basic Education, SATU, as well as the Autonomous Trade Union. So every word that is here, okay, is approved by them. So it is not being partisan. Okay? That means ATU has approved my forwards, has approved every other word in this document. If they felt aggrieved or peeved, they would have raised that as an issue. So that's not the case. So you should not draw that inference either. Because
can I just say something, Mr. Governor? Because I think the Honourable Gina brought up an important point, and they say she was compromising. It should have been written there, you know, somewhere in that report. Thank you.
And I think that's something we can do in our relevant process to clarify the process. In the absence of that, I was at pains to tender that explanation in the House for the record. The second issue that I want to deal with, okay, in the Eastern Cape, okay, that's quite the vast area. No, we were not part of any agreement that was concluded. It's common cause that those agreements were facilitated by the General Secretary of COSATU. It involved the Premier, the MEC, other politicians of that government, as well as more than just SATU as a union involved. But where we got involved as ELRC, there were at least three issues raised. One was the reinstatement of temporary teachers. Two was the post-provisioning.
And third was looking at some convening of a conference looking at improving the quality of basic education. Insofar as I then went, when informed by both the MEC's office as well as SATU, that there is this agreement, please come and help us to implement the parts that that matter to the ERRC. We started a process. We appointed a facilitator to look at the placement or the reinstatement of temporary teachers into vacant substantive posts as that agreement said. The second is to look at, from the court judgments as well as captured in that agreement, is the finalization of the 2012 post-provisioning norms, because FEDSAS had taken the provincial government to court. SATU was threatening to do the same, and so they got persuaded to drop their case against the department, subject to a process of finalizing the post-provision. FEDSAS was there on the temporary teachers, okay, and others. So we also appointed a facilitator to finalize those norms. Okay. And the third is to work with all the parties to resuscitate the chamber so that it can function and address these issues, so that the chamber is now functional and is addressing these two issues takes place in that chamber. So our task is to help these parties resolve these issues. We already identified that there would be problems about the temporary teachers, because in the period of this contestation in the court, the department had appointed 1,900 people in temporary posts. And if we have to take back the 4,200 that was suggested, there will at least be some educators who could not be reinstated, because those posts would not be vacant at some center, because Samfunza Lushaka best students got appointed in that intervening period. So we have to manage that process. The same must happen with the 2012 post-provisioning norms. A process of consultation began. The key allegation by SATU is that they were not properly consulted. Now, I'm not going into the merits of the matter, whether they were right or wrong. Our task is to make sure that provincial government is in a position to, at least by the 1st of April, have a finalized 2012 post-provisioning law, which the court realizes also needs to be addressed. Okay. So that's our role. That's the task we are playing. I'm also coming from a conference and of SATU, where they have convened a conference to improving basic education. Part of their commitment is that they too would have to begin to make some compromises about the 2010 and 2012. Okay? But that's a matter that is subject to this process of facilitation we are engaged in. What I do know is that if we apply the 2010 norms, the province will be bankrupt again. Okay? So, in our facilitators have to address those kinds of issues. I can't deal with all the details. I'm not personally involved, but we've appointed the experts to help those parties. What we can't do is sit on the outside and say, we were not part of that political agreement, therefore we can't get involved. We have a material interest to make sure schools get the teachers. What I'm also clear about is where those teachers are needed may not be necessarily where they were. I have been around that province, and I know teachers are needed in Maluti, Mount Fletcher, Labode, and all those areas. And that's where we need to encourage the trade unions, to encourage their members to go and teach in those schools. Okay. So that's the Eastern Cape issue. In relation to SAFE and ourselves, I've been at pains in this committee over the last few years to say that neither SAFE nor the ERRC can solve this problem totally. It does require some legislation. Part of the legislation to protect the child is to ensure
we don't have three duplicate hearings. Currently, the department must investigate, okay, and then charge a teacher. So that's the disciplinary process. Independently of that, SACE is empowered to also investigate and charge a teacher. And one doesn't depend on the other. The ERRC doesn't have those powers. What the ERRC has is when those processes are finished and the appeal process with the MEC finishes in the case of a disciplinary hearing or in the case of SACE, the teacher comes and refers the dispute to us. So we come much later in the process. If we want to really protect the child, the legislation must be in place that only one hearing is convened and everybody lives with the outcome. Secondly, given the problem of where departmental officials also collude and protect some teachers or officials who abuse children, that whole process should be independent so that it can become speedier. Now, I've made these submissions to you. In the interim, what do we have to do as the ERRC? Two things. You will realize that this year, in our plan, we're talking about grievances, disciplinary hearings, and suspensions. Working with the Department of Education, we want to set up the structures, departmental structures, to monitor how these grievances, disciplinary hearings, and suspensions are being handled. One. Two, to develop their capacity to have special hearings for the child that is conducted with proper prosecutors and intermediaries. Okay? Now, surely when that department has made a finding, currently, SACE has to conduct its own investigation to make another determination on whether the person must be registered or not. If legislation is in place, that independent hearing becomes binding on the ERRC and on SACE. SACE must merely live with the outcome. Once a person is found guilty, SACE then has an administrative task of deregistering the teacher. Okay? Not conducting its own hearing. Okay? There's a fourth one which none of us are involved in and it's independent, and that's the criminal one, where the courts deal with that separately. So I think we need to urgently sit and apply our mind as a collective and find the speedy mechanism that I've been putting on the table for the last 3 years on how we protect our children. I remember reading in the aeroplane yesterday, four teachers in a school targeting females who came from households where they had no parents. Okay? And they've just been suspended. We need to move to a point where we can one day say we'll have 0% abuse of children in our schools. Okay? And unless we work together, we're not going to do it. So we need to call SACE, the ERRC, the DBE together to fashion out what are these amendments that are needed and how can they be put fairly soon. We can't be talking of it for 3 years and not making progress. Okay. So that would address that issue. In respect of our efficiencies, now, yes, it's true. We don't have benchmarks in some of them. Some of them we're going to measure for the first time. Okay? But we may have guesstimated a target and we'll get a benchmark. Some things we have been measuring, okay. And so we can have targets. Like in dispute resolution, we are measuring days, so we already have those. In areas where we don't, then you'll find there is no baseline we will establish. The area that we are the weakest in is on collective bargaining. We can't on, if you look at our annual plan, there's two pages, and I've marked them out here, where we identify in detail collective bargaining at a national level matters, but we don't. We only say 20% on page 29 and 30. I know it's of importance to you and this country that performance management is indeed sorted out. so that there can be accountability in our schools. Okay? So, in the 20%, are you assured that is this one of the issues that's going to be addressed? I don't think so. See? It's not being clear on that matter. We've got about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 10 issues identified. Is that going to be one of the two issues of the 10 that's going to be addressed? We don't know. So, what we have on page 29 and 30, I think, as a percentage it seems fine, but it doesn't address your issue. Which are the matters they're going to address? Some of these issues have been too long on our agenda. Okay. So, collective bargaining is going to warrant significant attention by the parties in our council. Okay. The minister on the 1st of January this year, the release of the matrix results, also re-emphasized that the ELRC should be finalizing the contract of performance contract of principals. She also said the same last year, and perhaps at the end of 2010. We still have not made. Now, what is the progress we've made? The drafts have been in place. They've been subject to task teams. They've been presented, and it's now for final mandates from the parties. It would require that the parties are then going to look at the areas of deadlock. There's significant areas of agreement on many of the aspects. It's a question of how that is to be finalized. That has to be led by the Department of Education that now narrows the issues and looks at where the areas of difference are. Okay. So I thought I've covered that. The CFO will answer about the more detailed issue. All I want to say is our reserves we accumulate from savings. We're not an organization that must accumulate too much reserves. We're supposed to be collecting money and spending it for the purpose for which we collect. If we may accumulate too much of reserves, that means we are taking more money than we should. We've been utilizing those reserves to run the organization. We say by the end of, or the beginning of 2015, that's where we will be in problems. The question is, in 2006, at HEDCOM made the following proposals: that the levy increase for the ELRC should not be subject to every 5 years or whatever. It should be an increase based on a percentage and subject to a CPI or the percentage increase that educators and public servants get every year, so that you will determine a benchmark funding, and thereafter it will grow at the same rate as the percentage increase of public servants. So that in itself will then not require any further increase in levies, because it will create an annual increase in the income to sustain and grow your activity. And any savings we make can be used for special projects. So the question is, in terms of our special projects, the teacher lab, our HIV AIDS project comes to an end in September of this year. Unless we find other areas which we're busy exploring, that HIV AIDS project comes to an end. There's no future funding envisaged from the current funder. But there's an integration of the experience with the department that the process being undertaken. In respect of the teacher laptop initiative, we've done our work as the ELRC. We are busy in discussions with the DG and the department's officials to see how best the management of that takes over. What I can tell you is that we've accredited, our accreditation from a possible 13 service providers is now down to 8, and 8 of them say they're active. I've seen adverts from one company already in the teacher of the Mail and Guardian, and they have reported that a lot of teachers have shown interest. And I'm sure that the DG, when he comes before you the next time, will elaborate further on the measures to be undertaken. But as I indicated to you previously, we've done the facilitation work of that was required of us. But the management of the teacher laptop initiative rests with each provincial department, coordinated by the national. So I'm sure they will be further informed on that.
I think, is there any time frame in place? Because we need timelines for these things. Because I think whoever spoke to it said it's going on for quite some time now. I think they gave 5 years or something.
Well, I've been handling this since 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, when the Gazette came out and started a process. So 2010, we were hard at it. Even in 2011,
mm-hmm.
I came before you and looked at other possible modes of how that could be addressed. But we've done our work as the ENRC, which was to initiate. Now, the management of the process comes through. Because as teachers buy, we set up the infrastructure system so that teachers can get their allowance. So that is something that I think Mr. Khonjana can take back and will address when the DG comes back before you with a comprehensive response in that regard. I want to hand over to the CFO as I address other issues.
Just before you hand over to the CFO, I think there were important questions asked by Mr. Khonjana, the Honourable Khonjana. The one on the performance agreement for principals, I think you will have to answer it, and then the dispute of KwaZulu-Natal with one of the unions when it comes to the docking of salaries. Thank you.
Now, it is the right of every employer to deduct from employees when they engage in lawful or unlawful strikes. Okay? The ERRC was not involved in any way in that matter between NATU and the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Education and the NEC. And it is true, the court ruled in favor of NATU, but in a manner in which it still allows the department to rectify the manner in which they identified who was on strike or not. In law, it is generally accepted that if a union issues a notice to strike without specifying which educators are going to go on strike, then it can be assumed it issues it on behalf of all its educators. Okay. And so that's what the court had to deal with. And so I cannot in any way comment then on the process that's been undertaken. When somebody goes to the court and starts dealing with the matter, then it's out of our hands. If they asked us to facilitate that discussion, then it would be in a different matter. So, and now that it is in the realm of the court and there is a court decision, we wouldn't interfere. Unless the court says, refer the matter back to the ENRC, which it does whenever we lose an arbitration award. Okay, then generally, if we found the person to be dismissed fairly and the court says no, then the matter is reheard by us. Okay, if it was a procedural issue. Okay, or unless the court makes the determination that the finding itself is within the province of the court. So we don't generally get involved. I've not been asked either by NATU, and they have access to me and my office to get involved specifically on the matter. So I think I should clarify it on that basis.
Okay. The
principal's performance agreement is as follows. Is that the work that has been done over the last few years, there are significant areas of agreement. We have a special task team that has met and put a report. There are areas of differences that have been identified, and those differences need to be managed. And those are issues that I'm sure that will be pursued by the Department of Basic Education, because it is under pressure to ensure that an agreement is concluded.
Mm.
Can we be, is it possible to get a report? Because the information we have that the report from the task team of the chamber was rejected by the unions. The union instead submitted its own. What is the position of, because this is the information we have.
Now, I cannot honestly say to you that the union has rejected everything that has been put, because there are significant areas of agreement between both parties, but there are areas of disagreement. As a general secretary, the only privilege I claim here is that I do not wish to enter into the area of what is the areas of disagreement, because they are the ones that are subject to negotiation. Mm-hmm. But Mr. Panjana, you want to come in and assist.
Thanks. Mr. Panjana?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to indicate on the processes that we have engaged on seriously. Outside the chamber, the Director General has convened a meeting of principals, all principals of unions who are serving in the council, to determine those areas of disagreement.
Now,
critical to that particular meeting was to look
at the mechanism of how best to
deal with those areas of agreement. We've been able
to identify them. We are now in the process of
dealing with them, with the principals of the union. Now, after
we have been able to deal with that matter, we'll therefore be able to mandate the negotiators in going to
The Iran thing.
Because this
to us is very, very critical to
ensure accountability in the system. Because
if you don't have accountability in the system, it is
difficult to ensure excellence.
Thank you. Lorraine, I'm going to ask the CFO.
Thank you, Chair. I think maybe before I forget, I'll start with the issue of special projects. If you look at our consolidated budget, our involvement over the MTF period has really significantly come down. Over the past 3 years, we were allocating funding for those projects of millions. And if you look at what we are allocating in the next MTF period, we're talking from 3 million to 300,000. So that's the trend that indicates the disengagement, because our involvement was more of facilitation in terms of assisting the executive authority in terms of implementing those special projects. So I just thought maybe I should draw attention to the fact that also if you look at the consolidated budget, we have really slowly moved out of the facilitation process, because I think we've put it at a level where our involvement has put it where it should be really implemented. But however, we have budgeted a little bit in terms of assisting with the final implementation. That's my comment on the project. And I think the other one was the levies. The history on the levies is, since the ELRC was formed way back in 1994, we have had only one levy increase. We started off at 2 rand per party, and it was even decreased to 1.50 rand per party. And it's only then in 2007 in July where a collective agreement was signed for the increase from 1.50 rand to 5 rand per party. So now, in the meantime, we had registered, or we were scheduled under the Public Finance Management Act as a Schedule 3A public entity. Now, what comes in there is, as a public entity, we are not allowed to accumulate funds. If you have surpluses, you need to return that to National Treasury. So we had to ensure that we have projects, or we should indicate what the surpluses are going to be used for.
And therefore, we make an application on an annual basis to National Treasury to allow us to carry over the funds. So that is where the question was raised. You see, is it sustainable to have an increase once in 7 years? So we have sort of come to an agreement with National Treasury where we need to provide evidence that the funds would be needed in the future. And by way of our MTF period that we budget for, and also over the electoral period, which is going to be over a period of 5 years, we are in a position to indicate the sustainability of the council based on no increase in terms of levies, provided there is approval for us to carry over accumulated funds. So that is how we manage to handle the issue of the increase. Although we also need to remember that it's a product of collective bargaining between the two parties. They have to bargain and also consult their members as to whether they can accommodate the increase in terms of the levy. So if we could give ourselves some space of 2 to 2.5 negotiation over that period, we find it very helpful rather than having to get negotiations every second year in terms of the increase. So that is how we've been surviving over the years. I think the other comment was in terms of how could you have attending a conference as a performance indicator. I think what we, maybe it's not spelled out clear, but if you look at the annual targets relating specifically to research, it's spread over the MTEF period, and that is in the first year we will be identifying areas that need to be researched upon. And how to identify those areas, the parties involved in the planning process that have agreed that there would be an education summit in the first quarter. If you look at the 12-13 financial year per quarter, in the first quarter, there's going to be an education summit. Thereafter, in the third and fourth quarter, then is then that the item to be researched upon will be identified. Research will really not be done over a period of 1 year. First, there needs to be identification and agreement thereupon, and in the next following 2 years, that's where the implementation of the research items that have been identified will be included. So unfortunately for the period that we are providing the APP, annual performance plans, budget into the period coming in, there is no really a good outcome if you look at it in terms of service delivery. The outcome will be coming over a period of 3 years. It's not coming over a period of 1 year. So that's how it has been captured in the annual performance plan. But if you look at the targets over the 3 years, we have indicated that in the first year there will be the identification, in the second year it will be the research, and then in the third year there's going to be implementation of those identified issues. Now, the last one I think is the...
That is not my question. Does it imply that currently, as we speak, we have got no identifiable problems that need to research? You still have to go to that conference to identify problems, because research, by definition, we're seeking solutions to problems that exist. So you don't have problems, only to be identified at conference, that they understand it.
Yes, the spirit within which the question originally was asked, it's for the mere fact that just mere attendance of conference is not a major performance area that you can say we have worked at. When we come back to say, did we achieve? We say, yes, we achieved, we attended a conference. Not that we can't benefit from a conference, not that we can't contribute in that meeting, but we are seeing it's not a major area of performance.
you know, that we can then come back and judge you on it. And you just tell us on this specific aspect, all we were to do was to attend conference and we have done so. 100% achievement. You know, that kind of a thing. That's not what we expect you to do.
Thanks a lot. There
needs to
be no interjections now.
May I ask my appointing officer to really provide a clearer explanation about the two clarification seeking questions that have been asked, and then I'll continue with the last part.
Firstly, as a council, we spent millions on research. Our single largest research in the past was the major study on the impact on the health of our educators, which you call the HIV. But like us, the Department of Basic Education and others conduct research as well. What we've identified is that when we go to this conference, look at all the research that has been done and then identify what is it that we'd want further research on. That's number one. Number two is then how to prioritize it, because the funds that we have or the policy imperatives that we may want to develop will say prioritize these issues. So we currently have a research task team that's busy looking at it, but we want to go to that conference and look at it. Because sometimes we say, we'll ask you to do research on, let's assume, workloads. But we already did that. What is it different beyond? Or we'll look at absenteeism of educators. But there's a UNESCO study that the department commissioned. So we want to make sure that at this conference, and I'm sure we're going to involve other education stakeholders as well, is to look at that and then determine properly. Otherwise, we'll be spending millions more without having the desired effect and the limited resources. So bear that. In terms of the QLTC, there was a question asked. We were the single funder of the QLTC. And we helped the minister and the department to locate people and to direct the project through. That funding runs out at the end of this financial year. But it's not that we don't want to, but it's also the fact that resources are getting limited. And so our ability to fund them directly is constrained by that. So just bear that in mind.
Thank you. You can continue.
I think the last one, Chair, is where you had indicated on the incorporation of the comments by the Auditor General.
Yes.
It's a turnaround strategy.
Yes. Where is, you know, of course you have to include it. I just want to speak to the worker. Yes,
okay. Continue. Under executive services.
It's under executive services where we have indicated the financial management, accounting, and compliance services should ensure there is no qualified audit report and there should also be no repeat audit findings.
Mm.
That's basically where we have accommodated it. So.
Yes,
now, I don't think we've detailed here, but we do have an independent function audit committee.
Correct, yeah.
We do have an internal audit function that is outsourced. And part of their responsibility on a quarterly basis is to review the turnaround strategy.
Mm.
The CFO develops one, he tables it, and they monitor that progress. Okay. Now, we couldn't capture that in detail here, okay, but our target is set out there. So if you do want that, we then have to ask the CFO to send you a copy outside this meeting of that turnaround strategy. But the whole idea is just two things. We don't want a repeat finding of what was done previously, irrespective of what it is, and so he needs a strategy to address that. And the other is to have a clean report.
Thank you. I think we are more or less now completed with the ELRC. And just in brief, you spoke about the last thing, I'll start with the last, the turnaround strategy. I think that report has to be sent to Llewellyn. Then I think when it comes to the cost analysis of that building, it was in our last meeting with you, Honorable Dina spoke to it, and she wanted to know how cost effective is the whole deal. And I think that analysis we need to get as a committee. Then when it comes to those temporary teachers versus our bursary that we have, because look at the teachers that have bursaries get into schools, and there are temporary teachers that's not getting into schools. So I think when we meet you again, and even with the department, we have to speak to that, because it's very important. Because many a times we are having now strikes, because look at the South, say Afrikaans on a vice inni, including Sutton, took the Eastern Cape to court on this issue. Then when it comes to the referral cases from SAIS to ERC, that's in the Department of Disciplinary Action, we said we're going to meet our entities. Because I think even Umalusi have to be present. Because they have to do development too, you know, teachers' development when it comes to marking, etc. So we're going to call in all the bodies that we can speak to you to see what is overlapping. And then at the same time, you can speak to this issue too, that we know, you know, what the proposal should be when it comes to legislation. And Mr. Govender, I'd like to thank you. You know, for being here this morning, you and the CFO, to speak to your budget that you received. Although I noticed the budget was out by 1 million. I'm not sure, but I'll just read through it again, because the department gave about 65.1 million, and you're speaking to 66 at the moment. But it's very minimal, you know, when you compare it to the amount. So I don't think we have to really break our heads about it. And even Mr. Konyana, thank you for being present and, you know, leading the delegation. Because it's very important when it comes to the department that when the entities come to us, that the delegation is led by a senior person within the department that who received a delegation of power from the DG. And I have to thank Mr. Randall van der Neuve for that apology of the minister. That, you know, I know the minister is busy, and even the deputy minister, that they're not leading this delegation today. But we expect them to lead the delegation of the department when we speak to the department's budget and annual performance plan. I'm closing the meeting. You may leave, but when it comes to the committee, there's just two things you have to speak to and 1 minute to pass. So just be a bit silent. Okay. Oh, sorry. starting. Yes. We're not the yes. Past the minute. But I'm just going to speak to this.